Today's program was brought to you by Catskill Provisions. Located in a small corner of Northwest Catskill Mountains, they specialize in creating raw, all-natural, handmade food products. For more information, visit CatskillProvisions.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. In the studio today, we have bar manager of the Experimental Cocktail Club in New York City, Nico DeSoto. Nico, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Damon.
Nice to have you here. You've been at the ECC. This particular location has been open for, what, about 6 months or so now?
Yeah, a bit more than that. We opened late April last year. So beginning, 26, if I remember well.
Cool. And you're right there on Christie Street, Lower East Side.
So we 191 Christie Street is really next door to the box. We're basically between Stanton and Remington.
Cool. It's a great location, man.
It's a good location, and more stuff are opening around, so it's we're happy to be there. Yeah,
nice. With that much traffic and having such a cocktail bar that's kind of high in demand as far as like nightlife goes, do you find you're getting like kind of a different crowd with that much like street traffic?
We have a kind of. We don't have a specific crowd. We have pretty much everyone. People from the neighborhood. We have a lot of people from Chinatown as well. The only thing I would say we don't have, it's a real after-work crowd, you know, guy from offices, Wall Street and stuff like that. We don't have that early, but that's pretty much everything.
That's interesting. Yeah. Typically you get that kind of happy hour crowd coming out and grabbing that after-work drink, the much-needed after-work drink.
but it's coming slowly. I think people are first of all, when you open, you know, we open just before the summer, and in the summer we start opening only at 8 o'clock, if I remember well. So I think people as well get used to that and start coming at that time. But now people are coming earlier and earlier, and we have a good crowd.
Cool. And so you actually have been working with this company for longer than that.
Oh yeah. So I started as a bartender at Experimental Cocktail Club in Paris in 2009. It was only for a few months. I started in May, worked a little bit at Curieux Parlor, one of their location as well. But I left to do like a small travel around the world. At that time, I went to South America, worked a little bit for the Winter Games in Vancouver. And then I worked a little bit in New York when I was off for the opening at Drum. And a little bit at Painkiller as well. And then Romé de Gorianoff, one of the owners, came and asked me to open a location in London. So I went back, went to London, opened the location. We opened in December 2010. Worked for a year there, and then moved back to New York to open that one.
Cool. Was this just kind of like a personal journey you wanted to take around the world, like as far as travel goes? Or were you focusing on learning new techniques and learning about different spirits and ingredients along the way with your travels?
A little bit. I'm a big fan, you know, of travels and discover like different kind of cultures and people. I started traveling way before bartending. I was usually like doing a small job and travel for like 6 months, coming back. I spent 2 years in Australia like that, and I fell in love with travels and going everywhere, trying to be in every city in the world right now. When I start bartending, I use as well the travel to visit distilleries, to try local spirits. And it's even interesting as well when you try to create drinks. When you have certain flavors and or drink along your travel, you can really use it for your cocktail menu, for example.
Yeah. What were some of the most interesting ingredients or spirits that you found along the way? I know that's a hard one to answer.
Yeah. It's I tried a few local arak in Indonesia. That's very interesting. Talking about ingredient, it's more like stuff I will use. For example, right now, I'm working on a drink with pisco, and when you travel in Peru, if you go to very, you know, cheap restaurant, local restaurant, they serve you like a soup, and usually there's a drink called chicha morada. Basically, it's made with blue corn and pineapple and cinnamon. It's a bit thick and it's delicious, and I'm trying to do something like that right now.
Oh, cool. That sounds pretty awesome. I like pineapple and cinnamon in like any kind of earthy spirit, like tequila or pisco. They always work really well together.
Yeah, and the blue corn is something like that I don't see much in drinks, so I want to try that way to do something a little bit different, and we'll see how it works.
Cool. Well, that being said, with the Experimental Cocktail Club, what is your like cocktail style and focus, or do you kind of span, or like what's your like mission statement?
Well, we have a small list. It's only 14 drinks. We're changing like 4 or 5 times a year. I don't put classic on the menu because classic are awesome. We all know it. There's a lot of bar that use classic, so I try to do only creation. Mm-hmm. I approach the drinks like a little bit like cuisine, you know, like cooking, like trying to marry some ingredients that you wouldn't think wouldn't be obvious. And so I try to do like homemade syrup. I try to work on infusion. I try to work with certain technique that give a little bit, you know, something special. Like, you know, it's not, I'm not inventing anything, but, you know, like carbonating stuff. And so I like to work on that.
Yeah. I think that's kind of an interesting thing that has come up like over the last year, is like doing carbonated cocktails.
Yeah.
And also, any kind of like charged, like using a nitrous charger or like a CO2 charger to even do like flash infusions, like with a nitrous charger, that's a pretty cool thing. Like, I know Aaron Polsky and I did one with like black trumpet mushrooms and scotch. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And you could do it in like 30 seconds, you know? That's a really cool thing.
But black pepper mushroom and scotch, that's funny because I just released a drink on the menu with scotch and shiitake mushroom.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's really a great good combo. I mean, like lot of like funky earthiness, you know, it works really well together.
It works very well.
Yeah. That one also had, we did scotch with black trumpet mushrooms and then like cacao and absinthe. It was crazy.
Yeah.
It was like it was a camping trip. It was like, yeah, whiskey, mushrooms, and absinthe.
That sounds really good.
So, yeah, I like that. That's what are some of the other styles or some of the other cocktails you have, like some of the ingredients that you like using?
Well, we have a drink that I start putting on the menu in London. It's called Cota Ternate. It's the name is a bit hard to say. It's basically a small city in a small island in Indonesia. While I was there, you know, I had a small guide who showed me around the city. It was really nice, and he showed me, you know, the nutmeg and the cloves, because that's why the island was famous for the export of that. And I promised him if I create a drink and I put like, you know, like Indonesian style or like nutmeg and cloves and I put arak in a drink, I will call it Cota Ternate. So basically it's a milk punch. It's clarified with whey protein. So a lot of spices, coconut water, arak, Batavia arak and rum. We infuse it a few days with spices. And after, on the side, I boil a lot of milk, and once it's boiling, I add lemon juice, and it's going to curd the whole milk. And so it creates like kind of mud, you know, like with the whey protein. And once you put that through a super fine bag, like twice or three times, it clarifies the whole drink. So it's really nice in color and texture. And we bottle it. We serve it in a small bottle.
Oh,
so
nice.
People love it.
That's really cool.
And as well, it's very helpful because, you know, on a busy night, when you have a lot of tickets in front of you and half of the drinks are that one, then... You know,
it's the best.
Oh yeah!
It's like having like punch on the menu.
Exactly.
You know, it's like you can just bang that out when you're busy.
Exactly.
And it's, you know, it's you're not like really like cutting down on any kind of like integrity of the cocktail. You just made it easier for you.
Exactly.
It's still a delicious drink.
People are happy to see when they see the small bottle arrive. They're like, oh, that's different. That's cool, and they love it.
I think milk punch is a really cool drink, and it's one of those things that when people hear it sounds kind of weird, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a really, really cool old school cocktail, and I've seen some people experimenting with it lately, like actually putting on their menus. I know like Roger Lomax from Third Man, he was talking about it one time about doing a milk punch, and you know, Dave Arnold was talking about doing also one as well.
There's one really good. I don't know if you've been to Aska yet.
No, not yet.
That's really good. It's Shiraz and Imon Roque. So they're really, really good bartenders, really creative. You know, they've been, I think, both were chefs before. Mm-hmm. They started working at 11 Madison Park. Well, anyway, they do a very nice menu, and there's a milk punch as well like that. It's I think it's with oolong tea, and I don't remember the spirit, but it was really amazing as well.
Nice. I like teas and drinks, too.
Mm.
Tea, like, you know, it's obviously something that you can, you don't want to, like, necessarily brew a tea unless you brew it very strongly. But it's a really cool infusion, you know, like, basically the way you would make a tea anyway, you know. But instead of water, you use booze.
Exactly.
And you can do it. It's very versatile, you know.
You have so many different teas, so it brings more different flavors in the drinks, and that's very interesting. One of my bartenders told me about the Hong Kong milk tea recently. He spent time in China, and he tells me that it's really good. So he brought me to Chinatown, and we had a Hong Kong milk tea together. Basically, you know, it's an overstep, a lot of different black tea, but it boils for around like maybe 1 hour. You know, it has to be very strong in tea,
right.
And then they put condensed milk and they aerate it a little bit. You know, like a blue blazer, basically. And they serve that, and that's really good. So we create a drink like that on a menu called Tang Mu and Jelly. It's a mix between Hong Kong milk tea and Tom and Jerry. Tang Mu Jelly is Tom and Jerry in Chinese.
Nice.
And it's Hong Kong. It's with Hong Kong milk tea, and we aerate it a little bit, and we put the batter from the Tom and Jerry, and we put Crescent Blackstrap rum and Cardinal Mendoza brandy. It's
nice,
really good.
And you make the batter every day? Obviously, you have to do that every day.
Yeah, well, my bar back does.
Yeah. God bless him.
Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, like, when you aerate it, do you toss it back and forth like a...
No, so that's the thing. I couldn't do that, especially it's on a busy day, you know, it's going to be milk everywhere in the kitchen. It will be a disaster. So I bought, you know, that kind of... I don't know how you call that. It's a metal thing that you put for latte, you know, the latte coffee.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That aerates.
Yeah. It's
so we use that. We put it in a glass.
Yeah.
And we serve it in, I bought online, you know, the coffee cup, like the Greek one, We Love You or something.
Yeah,
like
that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I bought a lot of cup like that, and we serve it to the customer in this cup.
Nice. Is it the one with like the blue and orange like print?
That one, yeah.
Cool. That's great, man. See, that's really cool. I like the idea of putting like the milk punch in the bottle and like doing the coffee in the coffee cup. That's one part of the presentation. I mean, obviously, you know, there are different glassware for different drinks because of the way, for instance, like wine, there are different wine glasses because of the way it's going to aerate the wine, you know, and obviously you put drinks on the rock sometimes on pebbles, sometimes on a big rock, sometimes you serve the neat. But the way you present something in a glass is very important. And especially if you think like outside of the box and outside of the normal back bar and like what you have for like your Collins glass, your Rocks glass, your Coupe, your wine glass, all these, and start doing cool stuff like that. I love that. It's great, man.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. It's always difficult because you can't do everything you want because, you know, sometimes it's costly. Mm-hmm. And we are not a small bar. We can be high volume. On the weekend, it's super packed. So... And people, you know, people take away things.
Yeah.
So it's there's some stuff I would like to work with, but I can't.
Yeah.
If you go to a place like, have you been to Artesian at the Longham Hotel in London? Well, they have a lot of different glassware, and you know they're gonna use it in special occasions. That's super cool.
It's kind of like going to a tiki bar and having all the different tiki mugs.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Of course, those get stolen as well.
As well.
I know we do, like. A perfect example of a classic cocktail that's served in alternate like glassware is the Moscow Mule. You know, it comes in the little copper or
copper
brass.
Cup, yeah.
Yeah, the copper cup. And the thing is, like, it's the most simple drink ever.
Yeah.
It's a vodka and ginger beer with lime. But it comes in that cup and people freak out about it. It's just, you know, it's like that little extra bit of presentation.
I haven't seen a lot of bar actually serving it in that cup. We serve it in the highball as well, actually.
But yeah, we do it in the highball as well. But it's like, you know, if you have it, might as well use it. Mm. And that's cool. That's really cool. That's like taking it to the next level.
Exactly.
Cool. Let's take a quick break, Nico. And when we get back, we'll continue talking cocktails with Nico DeSoto, the bar manager of Experimental Cocktail Club in New York City. Back in a moment.
You're listening to Leaving by Dead Stars on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Catskill Provisions has Valentine's Day literally in the bag with their Seal the Deal gift bag. Start with chocolate honey truffles, and then move on to breakfast in bed with their traceable organic pancake mix and New York State maple syrup. Sure to satisfy any ardent locavore, check out the Catskill Provisions Seal the Deal package at www.catskillprovisions.com.
And we're back. You are listening to The Speakeasy. We have Nico DeSoto of the Experimental Cocktail Club in New York in the chair in the studio today. And we were just talking about some of his travels and how he had set up the Experimental Cocktail Club in London and had started with this group in Paris and eventually made his way to New York City and worked at Tram with a bunch of our buddies who have been on the show. What was that like? First of all, like, I would be very frightened. That's when I met you, actually. Were working.
Yeah, we met at Drum the first time. Well, you know,
I was afraid for you.
Well, I was not afraid. I was actually very thrilled because, you know, I was coming from France and I had my first job in New York. It was a dream for me to come and work here, and it happened to be at Drum. Tom Chadwick was really nice and to take me and gave me a few shifts. So I was doing like between 3 and 5 shifts a week. That's where I met Jeremy Hortel that we know, and Francis Neros, Nick Jarrett, Tonya Guffey, Mayer. So it was a great team. I was most of the time I was working by myself because I was doing like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So I was working by myself, but sometimes it happened I was doing a shift with Frank and Nick sometime on a weekend. So that was great.
Great guys to work with, you know, really, really insightful, you know, people with cocktails. And I think Jared, I mean, just that guy alone, you know.
Yeah, jeez. he teach me a lot of things. He's a very clever guy and very good bartender.
Yeah.
And Frank Cisneros teach me how to make drink with cucumber and Saint-Germain, so he's a good bartender as well.
Nice. You hear that, Frank?
That's for you, Frank.
That's for you, man. So let's go back to you started off with this company, and they own 5 bars in Paris, and then the one in London.
Yeah, so they opened the first one in 2007, Experimental Cocktail Club. Very, very small bar, very influenced by the New York scene, Speakeasy. So when I came in New York the first time, I could see like small detail than where in a bar, in the two first bar in Paris. A year later, they opened Curio Parlor in the 5th District. On 2 levels, and with a bar downstairs with a lot of... It's the only Nika bar, you know, Nika, the Japanese whiskey, mm-hmm. Outside Japan. A year later, so 2009, they opened Prescription Cocktail Club. 2010, we opened in London, and as well a wine bar called La Compagnie des Vins Surnaturels. And 2012, we opened New York, and as well they opened, so on two levels, a restaurant and a club. The restaurant is called The Beef Club, and downstairs the bar room. And now we are working on different projects, so I know it might open in Mexico City. Hotel Americano.
Nice.
They're working on Ibiza as well right now. And there are a few wine bars coming, one in London, one in New York. So they're always working on new projects there.
Yeah. It's a lot to take in, man. I hope they pay you well.
I'm focusing here in New York, and I don't really deal with all the other bars. They have great bartenders and good teams. So,
yeah, we were talking about it before the show. Because you're like general manager, bar manager there, so you take on a lot of responsibilities. Like, do you find it difficult to like keep your head in the game as far as like creativity for cocktails when you're worrying about who's fixing the ice machine or who's ordering straws?
Yeah, it's harder. I have to admit it's harder. I do two shifts. So I do two shifts on a Sunday, Monday behind a bar. And on the 3 days that I have left, I do basically general manager and bar manager. So it's a lot in 3 days. I have an assistant, Coco, who is a very nice guy, is hard worker. But it's, if I want to focus, and for example, if I want to do the cocktail list, I need to isolate myself and not think about like all the problems or bills and stuff like that.
Yeah. When you want to focus on creating cocktails, can you do that in the bar, or do you have to do it like at home or like in the office? You know, because I feel like, you know, when I'm at the bar and I'm trying to work on cocktails, I'm constantly like being interrupted by like something that needs to be done, you know, otherwise, and it's like I have to like work on my cocktails like either like after hours or before the shift.
No, I can't. I absolutely cannot work on a cocktail list at the bar, either in the office or you can focus. Is there always someone talking to you? Or so it's not possible. No, the way I do it, just I do it at home. Mm-hmm. I sit. I have, you know, I start to think about the concepts, and once I have the concept and the recipe, then I start playing around at the bar. But
So, and like go back to like the creative process, you know, like you said before, you take a lot of that from like culinary styles and different dishes, which I think is really cool, and I think it works out really well, especially in the city where we have access to so many different types of ingredients and spirits and everything. It's like we basically have like an open like playground to, you know, work with.
Oh, yeah, pretty much everything. You have like the best selection of spirit. Sometimes it's tough to find, you know, like small. For example, I was working on the first menu with a ratafia, and it was very nice. But the thing, it was not available all the time. So when you put a drink on the menu, especially in a high volume cocktail, you need the thing to be always there.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's a bit of a problem. But outside that, you have market, you have, you know, Chinatown, you can find a lot of crazy stuff, and all the spices store, like you have, you know, the famous one on First Avenue and Sixth Street. Yeah.
And there's SOS Chef as well. That one's cool. They're doing all those distilled, they do all these oils and distillations. It's really cool.
Yeah. And but the only thing as well, there's still a limit of what we can do, because, you know, we have a small kitchen, and we don't have all the equipment that the chef will have. So it wouldn't go further than that. You know, when you work with a kitchen, like they do Aska, and they have like sous vide, and then you can go further and create more and more. And it's even better when you can work with a chef, because like the bartender, we know our spirits, we know combination, but the chef knows stuff about food and way of cooking and that we don't know. Yeah. And when you can combine both together, it's super interesting.
The funny thing, like just to add to that, it's funny, I always say that like that's the best relationship you can have, is like between the bar and the kitchen. And, you know, to be a chef, it's like you've got to, there's no like bartending school that you can go to that's like that you're going to learn how to do all this stuff. And, you know, most of the creative stuff is outside. It's more on the culinary side anyway, you know, so it's not something that we've been exposed to in, you know, Jerry Thomas's book or, you know, whatever, you know. But I think that that's a very strong relationship. You know, like you said, even technical stuff, you know, like your clarification for your milk punch. It's like, that's not something that you get taught in your bartending 101.
No, that's not, but that's fun to play with. And the chef can, you know, all the if you look, for example, Tony, what he does at 69 Colebrook Row, mm-hmm. or Le Coq, or the Zeta Tannhaus Center, and Dave Arnold as well, Buchendijk, they use sous vide, they use centrifuge, mm-hmm. They use
Rotovap.
One small thing I discovered only recently, that's the Brix meter. That's going to tell you exactly the amount of sugar you have in your syrup or your cordials. When you use it, you know, because, you know, sometimes when you're going to make a syrup with fruits and it's going to release water, if you're never sure what you're going to end up. And checking with the Brix meter, I noticed that sometimes, you know, there's less sugar than you think. And with a Brix meter, that's a small thing, you put a drop of the syrup and tells you exactly. And then you can put more sugar and put the syrup 50-50 as you want, and you have a much better consistency. So small stuff from the kitchen that you can use and are very useful in the end.
It's pretty tech. Yeah. I appreciate all that stuff, and if I had it around, I'd probably use it way too much. You know, if I had a Rotovap, it'd be a problem. But you know, there's something to be said about like the human nature and like the inconsistency of like the human touch to it. You know, it's like, yeah, sometimes, and it's just like, actually not just human touch, but like the natural progression of, like, you know, 1 year we used 15 TriStar strawberries for our strawberry syrup, but then the next year it's like, oh well, obviously you're tasting this and making sure that it tastes from your memory what's consistent. But, you know, following a recipe that way can lead to it being less consistent, you know? So I feel like Brix meter, that's awesome, but sometimes it's nice, you know, just like the same way that like two different bartenders can use the exact same spec, the same juice, and just depending on the way they shake the cocktail, it's going to taste different, you know?
Exactly.
So I think both sides are admirable. It's like finding that sweet spot in the middle, like using the technology we have, but also relying on like someone putting their hands on it, you know?
Yeah, and you know, and it's not anyone, it's, You need time as well, you know. Like if you use Rotovap, you need time for that. You can't do that in a very high volume bar anyway,
right?
Because otherwise you're gonna spend like 5 bar bags doing preps all day. So it's just something. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't use it in every bar.
Yeah, sure, but then yeah, exactly. Because then every bar would be the same.
Yeah,
and that's no fun. Yeah. And as well as, you know, like, because you guys have the 5 bars in Paris, you've got the one in London, the one in New York, and many more to come, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
So, awesome. So what's the website? Where can we find information about?
We don't have any website for the bar, but we have a page. So if you type ECC Lower East Side or Experimental Cocktail Club Lower East Side, you'll have just a page with basically the hours and the address if you want to book a table, if you want to make a reservation.
Cool.
People think we're reservation only, but we're not reservation only. It's just if you want, you know, like you're coming with a group and you ensure you have a table, and then you send us an email and we take care of that. But
yeah, that's actually really cool, because a lot of places don't take reservations these days.
A lot of places don't, but I think it's when you want to plan something, when you're a small group, or if you come with your girlfriend and you want to be sure and you have a nice corner or a nice spot, and it's nice. You know, we have someone working on reservation all day, and we try to please everyone.
Yeah, awesome. Cool, man. Well, you know what? You've invited me. I haven't been yet, reluctantly.
You have to come.
But I will definitely be jumping in. So you said you're there on Sundays and Mondays?
Sunday, Monday, bartending. Otherwise, I'm there Tuesday, Friday and Saturday, running around, up
Great.
And down.
I'll be there on Monday. Nico, Sweet. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And check out the Experimental Cocktail Club in New York City. All right, that's it for today. We'll see you next week on The Speakeasy. Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.